Back in July, I had Robert Klein on the show. At the time, Robert's book had just come out, The Amorous Busboy of Decatur Avenue. And we spent a great hour on the show, and I think I helped him sell well over 3 copies of the book. At the time, he mentioned that he had a special coming up in December on HBO. Well, it is December, and that special will begin airing tomorrow night, and it being HBO, it'll be on about 402 times in the next month or so, but it debuts tomorrow night, and so Robert Klein is back on the Paul Harris Show here this afternoon. Hi.
Hi, Paul.
How are you?
Not so many times, but... 10 o'clock Eastern, so 9 o'clock Central.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you were the first one to ever do a comedy special on
HBO. I was, and it'll be showing New Year's Eve, which will be the 30th anniversary to the hour of the first HBO comedy special, which I did 30 years ago at Haverford College. It's hard to believe that much time has passed, but. You know, it was such a wonderful breakthrough in this business with all the money that goes down to these things. You have very little creative freedom. You know, you do a film or a television series for the networks. Man, everyone gets their 2 cents. Well, with HBO, they've never, in my 8 specials, asked me to change a word. Never were over my shoulder telling me what to do. And the same with Simon and Schuster in the book. They have the same title, cleverly, The Amorous Busboy of Decatur Avenue, the show and the book. And so I've really come through a unique creative period in the last few years where it's entirely, you know, just no one bothered it. And all. I'll take full responsibility. It's a great show.
Which, for a stand-up comedian, is the way you were used to working anyway.
That's right.
You write your stuff, you perform your stuff. Nobody says don't do that stuff except for an audience that doesn't laugh.
Right. But when you start dealing, you know, you're with Time Warner or... You know, Viacom, which owns Simon and Schuster Publishers,
and this radio station.
Someone's gonna, you know, someone's gonna finagle something, and yet, I mean, unless you're Spielberg, who can say anything he wants and do anything he wants, or Woody Allen, whose films are budgeted modestly enough so that he has total creative control. It's pretty rare in this business.
Now, when you did that first special in 1975, did you have HBO?
I did. I lived in Manhattan, and they had 400,000 subscribers at the Time Life, Eastern Pennsylvania, Manhattan, and Long Island. That was it. And now they have 43 million subscribers, and I take complete credit. I mean, you know, just proof before Robert Klein, 400,000 subscribers. After Robert Klein's comedy special, we look up 43 million. Obviously, of course, they have even Julius Caesar cursing.
That's right.
I think I throw in one curse word because it's important. I'm on HBO.
Might as well. Now, when you did that first one, there were only 400,000 people there. You know, I'm sure that your appearance there literally was big for them because you know you were one of the top-selling comedy recording artists and touring acts at the time.
Well, yeah. I was doing a lot of college concerts. Look, consider the possibilities. At that time... I had done in 75, I had done The Tonight Show probably 25, 30 times.
Yep.
I wound up doing it 82 times.
Mm-hmm.
That's with Johnny, a few extra times with Jay, not quite as many, shall we say.
Uh-huh.
More with Letterman. But it was an important breakthrough because instead of 5 minutes of a guy or 4 minutes on a talk show with restrictions on everything conceptual or language-wise, here was a chance to see... a kid like me at that time, in his full bloom in a college concert.
And did that have the same impact on your career as the Carson appearances did?
That's an interesting question. You know what, I'll tell you what it had an impact is. Television killed nightclubs, and then the HBO comedy series created a whole field of nightclubs, of comedy clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing could be as powerful as The Tonight Show, because my first one was in 1968, and in those 82 appearances, at least the first third of that time was before cable really catching on so that people would discuss it at the water fountain. There wasn't that as much on. And when you did a killer spot on The Tonight Show the night before, people talked about it. There were fewer choices then.
Since we're speaking about late-night stuff, I had Dick Cavett on the show a couple of weeks ago because he's been releasing some of his old material, including some John and Yoko stuff. And I know you appeared on his show a couple of times, and probably Mike Douglas and Merv Griffin and those.
Oh, my God. I was on a Dick show many times, and also I guest hosted for him, which was a wonderful opportunity. Only he, Carson Cavett and David Frost did I substitute for. You'll notice that Letterman and the modern ones, the Lenos today, they don't have substitute. They show reruns.
Yep. You think they're afraid that if they had somebody on there who was good, they might lose their job?
Not at this point. And that's the best for marketing. People don't catch it every night, so people are lying in bed. They see a Letterman that was rerun from before. In all likelihood, many of the people haven't seen it, but... they just don't do it that way anymore.
Now, in addition to the book and the HBO special, I know you're also out on the road, which means you're traveling, which means if you're like me, you're probably thrilled to know people can take screwdrivers back on planes again.
Well, the air marshals are getting tough. I mean, they're removing, Mideastern-looking men from planes, and there was an embarrassing incident at O'Hare. Apparently, a dyslexic air marshal was removing Midwestern-looking men. What the hell you done? I'm from St. Louis. I'm platinum. It was really embarrassing. I apologize and everything.
Yeah.
I guess that's okay. I think if anybody stabbed someone with a nail clipper, which could happen, it's a sharp object, although in first class on Continental from L.A., 3 weeks ago, I had a knife. They gave me a knife.
Yes, they actually give silverware.
So, if I try to bring it on the thing, they take it off. You know what? It's explosives and firearms that they're really concerned with.
Yep.
If, because of what we know now, the sad thing is that the orthodox instruction at the time of 9/11 is do what the hijackers want. No one ever figured them for kamikazes.
Right.
As suicide. So... now if someone tried to take over by stabbing someone, even hurting them, I think people would actually bite them and eat their flesh and kill,
Yeah.
They'd be dead.
There's no way they're getting into that cockpit.
Because they know the only alternative is dying. I guess they want to normalize things a little, but you know what? I like them to keep thinking of ways to keep other catastrophes from happening. I took a private jet the other day. I didn't pay for it, of course. It's too expensive for the big comedy festival in Vegas, and I was on there with Steve Van Zandt and Jon Stewart and Chris Rock. There's no security. I suppose theoretically somebody could, but they know who their customers are. The manifest is carefully explored. And that's, I'm talking about security here like someone who knows what they're talking about.
I was very impressed there for a moment.
No, I mean, it's the El Al method. Like, coming back from Paris, I visited Richard Belzer and his wife this summer in France again. I have a wonderful time there each summer for a week. And in Paris, I said, should I take off my shoes? No, monsieur, this is not necessary. But they looked me in the eye, and they asked me lots of questions. And, just casual, and they're looking at me as I answer. In other words, they know who's getting on their plane.
Yeah.
And I think that's the answer.
Yeah. The show is called The Amorous Busboy of Decatur Avenue, named after his book. It'll be on HBO tomorrow night at 9, St. Louis time.
And a few times after.
Right. Saturday night, by the way, a familiar night for Robert Klein. I recall... and this is an awkward segue right here. Let me just go with it while I'm on this little rant here. I recall sometime in the mid-70s, I know you were on Saturday Night Live very early on in one of the first few shows.
Yeah.
But I remember maybe 2 years later actually being at Saturday Night Live. My brother was a huge fan of the show and got tickets. And
The Lobsters at 8 New York?
It wasn't that one. It was the cheeseburger night.
Oh, that was it. I was the first customer in the first cheeseburger sketch, yes. And it's funny, after an entire career of wonderful work, 40 years, Yale Drama School, Second City, I will actually put on my tombstone, was the customer in the first cheeseburger sketch.
Cheeseburger.
I ordered eggs. He says, no eggs, cheeseburger.
Now,
we had a hard time keeping a straight face. When you know you have something funny, like I'm doing a movie now in New York with Fred Willard.
Yes.
The great Fred Willard from all the Christopher Rush films. Now, he and I were hired in Chicago, in New York, to go to Chicago to be in Second City 40 years ago, last March.
Wow.
We keep in touch, But we, except for one Tonight Show host where I had him on to do a sketch with me, we haven't worked together in 40 years.
Wow.
And he made me laugh so much. We were dressed in convicts suits because this family is getting married. They have their holiday card theme every year. This year it was convicts, like a funny, you know. And he made a joke. He said, you know, I was in the penitentiary. I had a nice boyfriend and everything. And now they... He still makes me laugh 40 years later.
Was he as great at the deadpan stuff 40 years ago at Second City?
And he proves you don't have to be Jewish and neurotic to be hilariously funny. You know, I mean, he just... David Steinberg, who was at Second City with me, that we were at odds as adversaries, but we both agreed how funny Fred was. He's just marvelous. He has his own approach, and it's one. He's one of the funniest people, and we can still make each other laugh. We've been laughing on this film with Frances Conroy from 6 Feet Under, and Judith Light plays my wife, as she did in that ill-fated series on CBS called The Stones.
Mm-hmm.
And I love working at home in New York. You know, it's so much fun.
What's the movie about?
It's a love story. I don't know if you remember an independent film that did quite well called Kissing Jessica Stein.
Yes.
Well, this Jennifer Westfeld had co-written that with a woman, and now she's written this one all by herself. She also stars in it, as she did in the other. She's absolutely breathtakingly adorable. She's about a 34-year-old woman that, you know, I wish I could... Turn back the sands of time.
Yeah, well, there's that amorous busboy coming out again.
Coming up in me again, but don't have the same facility.
But there are chemical assistants for
so
that, you know.
And she wrote such a good script that all of us are doing this for very modest money. You know, this isn't, it's a few million bucks budget, and it's going to be a great hit, I know it. But it's so much fun working with all these great people, and working at home, at hometown, without having to travel. Although, you know, I've traveled a fair amount. I mean, put it this way, Paul. I haven't purchased a bar of soap in over 35 years. And I haven't had need to buy a sewing kit disguised as a matchbook cover in so many years. Or a bathing cap made for a conehead, which cuts off all circulation to the brain. And coat hangers. Although they fouled me there because, you know, nowadays you want to take the coat hanger home with you. You have to take the closet with you.
That's right.
They fouled that.
You're absolutely right. Hey, when I was looking over my notes for when we were going to talk back in July, one of the things that we didn't get to, and since you brought up movies, I'm going to bring it up here today. I wanted to ask you about working with Burt Reynolds on the movie Hooper, in which you played this kind of megalomaniacal director. Roger
based
Dean.
On Peter Bogdanovich.
Oh, yeah?
Who I spent several hours with the other night. There was a scholarship fundraiser in Madeline Kahn's memory, and I knew her so well for 35 years. Where I worked with her at least in 7 major projects. Well, Bogdanovich used her in a number of films, Paper Moon, others. And Bert hated him because he was in this musical called At Long Last Love.
Mm.
And, you know, he had a reputation for arrogance. So Bert would give me these Bogdanovich lessons on how to be an obnoxious director. Bert was the greatest, and he was at the top of his game. He was going with Sally Field, who bragged to my wife then, I mean, my only wife, I've been divorced for 16 years, but how great he is with her children. Bert was like number one. He was first rate, a real mensch, as you might say, and I don't know what happened with all that scandal with the wife he married and all that, but he was aces up then, and he helped really direct this movie, which was a wonderful movie about stuntmen in movies. Yeah.
And it was also about Bert kind of making fun of himself. And
oh, yes. And Hal Needham, the director, had been the premier Hollywood stuntman. He had broken 52 bones. I mean, he was... Poor thing was on these, painkillers.
Mm-hmm.
But he used the expression "some bitch" for all nouns. You know, boy, that's he'd look at the car. Boy, that's a shiny some bitch. Someone was wearing a black. That's a black some bitch. And he was. Once in a while, you see an old Western, and I know him. So I see an Indian, you know, getting, he gets hit with an arrow, and it's Hal Needham, you know.
Uh-huh.
They were wonderful guys. They were risk takers for a reason that I don't think is valuable enough. I had nightmares on that film, which was a lot of fun, because they did such dangerous things. But in the end, between Bert helping and guiding Hal Needham, it really is a first-rate movie, which a lot of critics took seriously, like a movie about movies, like Truffaut's Day for Night. You know,
were the stunts that we saw, particularly the big long stunt at the end where Bert and Jan Michael Vincent are driving the car through this supposed earthquake, was that really stunt work or was that special effects?
It was stunt work. There was 26 acres of buildings in Tuscaloosa that were from World War II and surplus that they wanted demolished. The movie company found this out and said, hey, we'll demolish it for you. Let us photograph it. And it was spectacular.
It really was.
I mean, there were industrial smokestacks just missing a car. Well, that what you see is what you get. Those were real.
And I guess you only get one take on the smokestack just missing
the
car.
Oh, yes, sir. It was one when the 26 acres went up, and a lot of these guys in Tuscaloosa going, God damn, I've never seen anything like that. I mean, there was some, you know, that was one take. Yes, 26 acres of buildings. And then there was a bridge. There were twin bridges, one of which had been very badly damaged by a truck explosion, so they photograph the intact bridge, and then they blow up. You see these explosions and things, and then you see the damaged one. I mean, these guys were very clever in their destruction, and there was only a broken ankle on it. But there was a sad thing about it. There was a guy named AJ Balkunas, who was the most intelligent stuntman from New Jersey. And he got killed on his next film, working for Lee Majors.
Oh.
You know, jumping from a building or something. And these guys jump from buildings, helicopters. I had nightmares about it, but only a sprained ankle in the end. They're really careful in their madness. Now, this is the kind of job that I was trained not to do. With my parents going, watch out for that lamp cord. Don't cut that bagel towards your neck. Don't cut your head off. You know, I had to deal with that, and these guys are jumping off a building.
Remarkable. Well, I'm going to have to go back and watch Hooper again sometime. And
wonderful movie.
Certainly tomorrow night I'll be watching HBO, 9 o'clock Central Time, 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific Time. Robert Klein's 8th HBO special, named just like his book, The Amorous Busboy of Decatur Avenue. It's always a pleasure having you on the show, Robert.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for your time today. Robert Klein on The Paul Harris Show. It's News Talk 1120 KMOX.